Okay. We're holding the top line of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. We learned yesterday about the matter of the Shir Shoyim, that on Rosh Hashanah morning they'd usually do the regular Shir Shoyim because usually Edim hadn't come yet. In the afternoon usually they'd be doing the one of Rosh Hashanah. There was a mix-up, they weren't sure because Edim hadn't come. So that brings us to discuss about the Shir Shoyim in general. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Oymim Shum Rabbi Akiva, Barishin Mahayu Oymim, what do they say in the Beit Mikdash on the first day of the week, on Sunday? Hashem Aretzim Loya, the capital that we also say, each of these Shir Shoyims are the same ones that we say nowadays. Why that one? Hashem Shekana, because Hashem acquired the world, the heavens and the earth, the Hikna, and he bequeathed it to those who live on it, that's Tevel V'Yoshve, Hashem Aretzim Loya, the world and everything in it belongs to Hashem, Tevel V'Yoshve V'Yoshve, but the earth now belongs to those who live on it. Shalat Ba'olam, and Hashem was the only ruler in the world. Even the Malachim hadn't been created yet, because the Medrash brings that some of the Malachim were created on the second day of creation. So the second day already, okay, you could have Minim and whatever that could claim that there's other beings, Chas V'Shalom, that helped Hashem in creating the world. The first day you can't even say that, because there's nothing else other than Hashem.
So he gave it.
So he made the world, and then he handed it over to us human beings to manage it and to live on it and to live appropriately on it.
That was on the fourth day.
The first day is when Hashem created the world in general. Rashi mentions in Chumash, and the other Rishonim also talk about it in their Perushim on Chumash, that the first day Hashem created all the raw material of Ma'aseh Bereishis. Then on each of the other days, he took that raw material and formed it into the respective things, the heaven, the rakia, the dry land, this, the that, the other. But everything, the initial creation itself of matter was on the first day. And that was the purpose, the last did with the so he gave it over to us, that we should be using it to make a dwelling place for Hashem. Marsha also goes on in some detail that the rest of the capital also Miyala Bahar Hashem, Sushara Mashaychem, all kind of continues on this theme. Some of the Mephoshim also say an interesting idea that when we say Hashem Aretz and Loya, the world and everything that belongs to Hashem, it means part of this kind of a hikna is the idea that, like Rashi says in the first Rashi on Chumash, that Hashem, that if the Goyim claim you're thieves, you stole the land of the seven nations of Canaan, we tell them the whole world belongs to Hashem, he can give it out to whoever he wants. So that's all implied in this Hashem Aretzim Loya as well.
What do we say about Aretz and Sisterim? The whole world belongs to Hashem, not only the earth.
Ha'aretz means the earth. Umloya and everything in it. Yeah, also the heavens, but we're mainly focusing on the earth because that's where we serve Hashem. Basheni Mahayim, remember what do they say on the second day of the week? God Hashem Mahulamoid, Hashem is great and very praised. Hashem Shechilik Maisav, because on that day Hashem first started dividing up his creation. He created the Rakia, the firmament, between the upper and the lower waters. And he ruled over them. As Rashi says, v'nis'alav yashav amorim, he was raised up and enthroned in heaven, which is similar to that capital talks about that Yerushalayim is the special place of Hashem's Shekhinah on earth, like the heavens are Hashem's special place of his Shekhinah in the universe collectively. So therefore there's that relationship between the choosing of Yerushalayim and the splitting up of heaven and earth, and then defining that there's a heaven and there's an earth, there's a Gashmius and the Ruchnius. We're trying to keep it low, but. Vashlishi Hayoim, on the third day of the week, they said, Elakim Nitzavad Mishael, Hashem stands in the congregation of Hashem. Hashem Shigila Eretz B'Chachmasi, because on that day Hashem revealed dry land with his chokhmah, the heich and tevel ados, and prepared the world for his congregation to dwell on it. In particular, and some of us can talk about the idea that in that capital it talks about the problem caused by corrupt judges, admasa tishpetu avel, yimotu komoyis de'aret, like Hashem separated the dry land from the earth, and the dry land from the water on that day, but the false judgment makes that the earth get swamped again by Mabul. So therefore, there's that relationship. And more generally, Hashem is the Ba'ad Askel. Hashem stands in the congregation of Hashem, so therefore it has to be the place where we, the congregation of Hashem, stand and carry out our avodas Hashem. The dry land. He revealed the dry land with his chasm. Yeah. Yeah. On Wednesday they would say Kel Mekamas Hashem. Hashem Shibara Chama Olavana, because on that day Hashem created the sun and moon. But also the Parame of day, and on that day he's going to punish. Not on that day. In the future, Hashem is going to punish those who worship them. So Kel Mekamas Hashem. Hashem is a god of vengeance. And the whole capital talks about how Hashem is going to deal with those who harass the Jewish people, and all this is all related to this idea that they worship the sun and moon instead of Hashem.
Otherwise, if they worship Hashem, they would do this all
the time. That would be part of the idea, yeah, because then they would realize that they have to behave a certain way, yeah. Bachamishi hoyomrim. On the fifth day, they would say, "Haninu le'lekim u'zenu," sing to Hashem our power. Hashem shabara ofis v'dogim l'shabeach l'shmei, because on that day Hashem created the birds and the fish to praise His name. So Rashi says that means that's the effect that they have on people. When people see all the different kinds of birds and all the different kinds of fish that there are in the world, it causes them to praise Hashem that He's able to that He created such a variety in the world. Some of Hashem say it means the birds and the fish themselves. We know that everything in the world praises Hashem. Hello? We know that everything in the world praises Hashem. There's a lot of parakshir you know about that. So the various kinds, the birds and the fish all praise Hashem, and therefore it's appropriate to have Ninu Lelekim within, sing Hashem. Bashishi Hayoimrim, on the sixth day, they would say Hashem Moloch Gedus Lavesh. Hashem is king. He's clothed himself in greatness, in Gedus, in greatness. Hashem Shigomah Malachta, because on the sixth day Hashem finished up His work, a Malach Aleihem, and then He's king over everything that He created. Hashem is enrobed in royal robes like a king. Bashvi Hayom Mizmer Shiliyah Mashabbos. On the seventh day, on Shabbos, they would say Mizmer Shiliyah Mashabbos, which means Yom Shikulei Shabbos. This is in honor of the day which will be entirely Shabbos. Meaning, as I was going to say soon, that the world as we know it lasts for 6,000 years. Then comes a seventh millennium of Shabbos, of Yom HaMashiach, Lasid Lavei, whatever.
Every day will be Shabbos?
In a certain sense. Yeah, we'll get to soon what that means exactly. So therefore, so Mizmer Shiliyah Shabbos is referring to that future perfect world. And again, of course, we'll talk about that. That's why, for example, so what do we have in that capital? That Tzadik HaTomo Yifras, the Tzadikim will flourish forever, the Shom Lamadeab, as opposed to the Shoei Vadeo, destroyed forever, etc. That's Rabbi Akiva. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rabbi Akiva. Amar Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Nechemia says, why? Ma ro'o chachamim v'chalaf ben ha'prokim al olus. Why are the chachamim making a distinction between these prokim? Meaning, what are we saying? The first 6 days, the kapitlach for the first 6 days, are all referring to the past, to what Hashem did during the 6 days of creation. The seventh one all of a sudden is shifting gears and going to the future, to loss of love. Why? Ella, he says as follows. Barishain Shekhanah Vehikna Vashalaf Ba'olama. He goes through it all again. On the first day, it's that Hashem created, that Hashem acquired the world and then deeded it to us and was the only ruler in His world. Vashaini Shechelik Ma'asim Lalachalei. The second day, we say God Hashem Olamayid in recognition of the fact that Hashem divided up His creation and ruled over them. The third day we say because Hashem revealed the dry land of the Chachma and prepared the world for His congregation to live on it. The fourth day is we say Kel Mekamas Hashem because Hashem created the sun and the moon, but also the Parame of Den. In the future he'll pay. This is Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Nechemia is going over. He agrees. In other words, on the face of it, he agrees with Rabbi Akiva on all the first six. He's just going to argue on the seventh one. So why is he repeating them over again? Right. Some of Hashem say he's just repeating it over again because he wants to say, this teaching, the way you heard it from Rabbi Akiva, is wrong. I'm going to tell him over the way it was actually told. There are a couple of Mepharshim that focus on the facts. In Rabbi Akiva's, each one, it says, Al Shem. Each one, the one for Yom HaRishon, it says, they said, Hashem HaRishon Malay, Al Shem, because of Shekhanah V'Hikna V'Shalat V'Elava, etc. Each of the ones he says, Al Shem, except for the one for Shabbos, which he does not. And Rabbi Nechemia is going to do the other way around. Rabbi Nechemia does not say Al Shem in the first six. He only says Al Shem on Shabbos. So therefore, there's an explanation, that there's an explanation one of the Mepharshim gives, that besides, it's not just they're arguing on Shabbos, it's not just they're arguing what the meaning of Mizmor Shir V'Yamei Shabbos is, it's also they're arguing even on the first 6 days. Is it fundamentally that David HaMelech wrote these kapitlach representing the 6 days of the week? Each of them is al shame, something that happened during one of the 6 days of creation, and therefore those are the appropriate kapitlach. Or is it no? David wrote them for other purposes entirely. The Levium, when they're casting around, what song are we going to sing each of the 6 days of the week? They found something appropriate, but it wasn't David's original intention when he wrote each of these six. So that's the thing. If we say Al Shem, then it means that the kapitel itself was written when David wrote this kapitel tilim, kapitel chavdal, kapitel manches, whichever it was. He had in mind that it's going to be the shir for that day of the week, because it represents such and such. Whereas Reb Nechemiah is saying not necessarily. Reb Nechemiah is saying the kapitel was written for some other purpose. But the Levium, when they had to decide on what song they're going to sing every day in the Mikdash, then they happened on those. The fifth day we say because Hashem created the birds and the fish, the praise his name. The sixth day Hashem malach, because Hashem finished his creations and ruled over them. And why do we say Mizmor Shir V'Yamei Shabbos on the seventh day? Because on that day Hashem rested. Not like Rabbi Akiva is saying because there's going to be a future Yom Shekolo Shabbos, but because in the past Hashem rested on the seventh day, so therefore all of them match. They're all referring to the past. And the Gemara points out, their underlying argument between Rabbi Nechemiah and Rabbi Akiva is, or Rabbi Yehuda, is on what Rabbi Katina says. Dharma Rabbi Katina, Shita Alpha Shni Havi Alma, our world as we know it is going to last for 6,000 years, V'chad Charuv, and then there's 1,000 years when it's destroyed. What does that mean? We'll talk about it in a second. But if it's destroyed, it means, in other words, that there's no work being done. So it's a Yom Shekolo Shabbos. It's a day when it's a day of all Shabbos because no work is being done. So it's like a 1,000-year-long Shabbos.
And destruction is destroyed.
Wait. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "V'nisgav Hashem levade v'yemahu." Hashem will be exalted alone on that day, meaning alone. There's nothing else. There's no other creation. And v'yemahu on that day, a day of Hashem is 1,000 years. Therefore, we're talking a 1,000-year period. However, Amar Abaya Trecharuv, but Abaya says, no, it's actually going to be 2,000 years of destruction. Shenema Yichayenu Miyamayim, as the Pasuk says, Hashem will make us live through the 2 days. Again, 2 days meaning 2,000 years. So the point is, according to Rav Katina, if there's 1,000 years if there's one millennium of Chad Charuv, then good, that corresponds to one day of the week, to Shabbos. According to Abaya, there's two, and it doesn't correspond to the days of the week. It's the seventh and eighth millennium. So therefore, that would be why Rabbi Nechemiah is saying you can't say that Mizmor Shir V'Yamei Shabbos is referring to the future Shabbos. It has to be referring to the Shabbos of the past, the Shabbos when Hashem created the world. Literally, it means Hashem will make us live throughout the 2 days. By Yemei Shlishi, the pasuk continues, on the third day, Yikmeinu V'Nichya L'Fanav, will raise us up and we'll live before Him. Yeah, but. So what does this mean? So what does this mean? Chad Charuv. So of course there's many Rishonim that talk about the idea. The basic idea that's brought in Chassidus based on those Rishonim is that if we're not talking about when we say the world is going to be destroyed, it doesn't mean like the world ceases to exist and it means the world is going to be on a completely different level. There's going to be a world, but it's going to be on an entirely different level than what we know of.
It'll be a
different kind of world. In other words, there will still be people around. The Gemara talks about in Sanhedrin, in fact, that even during the time of Chad Charuv or Trei Charuv, you still have the tzaddikim floating on the water. But it means, in other words, it's going to be a completely different kind of existence than what we're familiar with. So that's what we're talking. That's, in other words, up to the year 6000 is the time when the world functions as we know it. Sometime during that time, Mashiach is going to come. But even after Mashiach comes, as the Rambam says, Olam Kamin Hagen Noyeg, for the most part, the world still continues to run as we know it. The natural laws, the natural world as we know it still exists. Then comes this Chad Charuv, Trei Charuv, where then it's a completely different order, a completely different level of existence.
So that's going to be, what, the seventh?
So that's what we're saying. According to Rav Titinius, the seventh millennium, from the year 6,000 to 7,000. And according to Abaye, from the year 6,000 to 8,000. But there's an interesting idea also that's brought in Chassidus, that this charuv is also related to the word charuv, meaning carriage. We find that the Gemara we're going to have in Tainus in a few weeks, that Elchanan Mendoza was a tremendous tzaddik. The whole world is sustained in his foot, and he himself lives off a kav of charuvim, a kav of carobs from one week to the next. Yeah. So the idea being, in other words, that charuv represents like a kind of hashpa from Hashem that's too high to come down into our physical world. So in Elchanan Mendoza's case, for example, all he can get, you know, the even though the whole world is sustained in his foot, all he's getting is charuvim. All he's getting is like this very attenuated kind of hashpah. So that's what we're talking about, this chad charuv. Today charuv is a time when the world will be able to absorb that kind of hashpah from Hashem, and therefore it'll be on a completely different level, on a much higher level.
Why would he
that's what we're just saying, that Al Pichsidus is the idea, because the whole world is sustained in his foot, he has such a high level of he's bringing down such a high level of Elikus. Such a high level of Elikus can't really fit into our world. It would make the whole world bustle. So he winds up having only the charuv.
Why him and not
he was the Tzadik Hadar.
Each
one in their times. I don't know. I mean, each one in their own times in their own way. Yeah. Did everyone talk about Nesich, by the way? So what would Rav Akiva answer to Rav Nehemiah's objection? It's true. Why you have 6 days of them refer to the past and one day of the week the epistle refers to the future. Rav Akiva would say, because Shabbos is higher than time. So it doesn't matter whether it refers to the past or the future. Either way, it's different than the other 6 days of the week anyway.
Next, Gemara asks,
thank you. Okay, so now we've covered what kapitel they said for Shir Shoyim each of the 6 days of the week by Shachar, by the Chumash of Shachar. What about the Musfid Shabbos in Mahiroim? Remember, what did they say by Musaf of Shabbos? Amarav Onan Marava, Amarav Haziv Loch. They would take the Shira of Hazinu and split it into six parts.
The
Shira of Hazinu. Hazinu Hashemayim Vadabera. The Shira that Moshe sings at the end of his life. They'd split it into six parts. The first part begins Hazinu, which is a hey. The second one, thank you. The second one begins with the Chur, which is a Zayin. And each of the other ones begins with a pasuk that begins with the appropriate letter. So it spells out, Haziv Loch, the glory is yours. Why is that appropriate? One thing is, Maharsha says, because the song of the Hazinu is the song of Moshe. You know, it's Moshe's, so to speak, a swan song, his last song before he passes away. And therefore, so Moshe's face shone. He had Koran or upon him. He had Ziv on his face. And therefore, it's appropriate to split up his shear into the letters Haziv Loch. The glory, the shine is yours. The same division that they did here in the Beis Hamikdash of Haziv Loch is the same divisions we have in Shul. Now, when it comes to the Hay and the Zion, it's very clear what they are. The Hay is definitely Hazinu, you know, the Zion is definitely his fur. But what each of the other ones is, there are different opinions, even in the Sefer Sofrim, from the time of the Goyim is one list, the Rashi has a list, the Rambam has a different list, etc. Because there are several Sofrim in that parasha that begin with a Yud and several that begin with a Vav and so forth. So there's several different possibilities. So Rashi says what it is is they divided them up very evenly. Rashi says the first three sections each have six psukim, and the last three each have eight psukim. Actually, the fifth one has nine psukim, or whatever. So you have six, 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 eight, nine, eight. So it's very even. The Rambam has a different understanding, and the Rambam's understanding actually is what we have in the Chumashim and how we read it in Shul. That's not they're completely different lengths. The first three indeed are six psukim each, but then the last three aliyahs are varying lengths. One interesting thing that Eber once pointed out in a sicha, first of all, it comes out a difference between Rashi and Rambam. If you look in the Pesukim of Hazinu, if you look in the way that Rashi divides it versus the way that Rambam divides it, you come out, according to Rashi, there are a couple of them where it's all Tosafot. There's no psukim of nechama in some of the aliyot. And Rashi says, in fact, there's a reason for that. Why do we make the breaks in these psukim in these places? Actually, Rashi doesn't say, but the other Mepharshim say the reason is because Hazinu is meant to be, it's a shir of tshuva, to get the Moshe's warning the Jewish people what's going to happen if they don't live up to what they're supposed to. So you want to break by these places, actually the Rambam, I think, says this, you want to break by these places where there's tarichacha in order to get the people to do tshuva. So they realize how serious things are and they do tshuva. It comes out according to Rashi, then, the Rebbe says in a sefer in Chedek HaDalad, that some of these aliyahs indeed have no psukim of nechama in them at all. They're all tarichacha. Whereas according to the Rambam, every one of them has some nechama in it as well.
Is it secret or is it...
No, it's just that's the way it comes out, according to the Rambam's division versus according to Rashi. And the Rebbe discusses at some length about how that relates to their different views of why it's divided up this way. But there's another interesting thing that Rebbe mentions in that sicha, that each of these six divisions of Hazinu in a way corresponds to one of the six Shir Shoyan that we discussed before. For example, the first one is Hashem created the heavens and earth. That's why we say Lashem Aratim Laya. And corresponding to that, Hazinu Hashemayim Vadabera. Vishma Aratim Refi, heaven and earth. Listen to what I have to say. The second one is that Hashem divided up the world. Hashem divided the heavens and the earth. And corresponding to that, we have Chor Yemosa Olam, Binu Shnosa Vader. Consider how Hashem split up nations by the Dara Flaga, etc. And so forth, going through each of the six aliyahs of Hazinu, each one of them corresponds to the theme of that day, of the Shir Shoyim of one of the days of the week. And then the seventh aliyah of Hazinu, which talks about Moshe passing away, and it was Moshe going up to a higher level, corresponds to Shabbos, which is also when the world's going to be on a higher level, like we said before. You're talking about in Hazinu, or you're talking about... In Hazinu, there's a few psukim, right? There's a few psukim in the middle of Hazinu over there, right? With the machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia, whether they're referring to the Goyim or to the Jews. But, right, but either way, the last few psukim definitely are talking about the Poronos of the Goyim. Shanoisi Brak Habi, Ashkir Chitzam Itam, Harninu Goyim Amo, yeah.
Where are the people in the beginning? Is it talking about the Poronos against
So there's two different ways of looking at it. That's why it actually brings both explanations over there. But all the middle psukim over there, from like Lulei Katz Oyev until Ki Yadin Hashem Amoy, are the ones where there's the argument about what it means. That's the thing. According to Rashi, you don't break. We go according to the Rambam. We break for the we have the end of Chamishi and the beginning of Shishi at Ki Etzo Al Shamayim Yod. So the last pasuk of Chamishi is Ruhu Atarpi Ani Anihu Ve'en Alakim Imodi Ani Omis Machaya Machasiv Ani Erkov En Yodimato, which is already spoken of Nechama. That look, you know, I have the power to do whatever I want in the world and save you from the Goyim. Whereas according to Rashi, Shishi begins four pasukim earlier by Yodin Hashem Amos. So therefore, we have Chamishi all is all Puranos, all the bad times. So they split it into six parts. And as the Gemara is going to say soon, what it means is each Shabbos by Musaf, they would do one of these parts. So the first Shabbos Musaf, they would do from Hazinu until Tzur, the second week from Tzur until Yakivehu, or wherever the Yud is, etc. And then, of course, they'd go through the whole Shira in 6 weeks and then start all over. Every Muslim Shabbos, they would do another section of Hazinu. Yeah. Well, we do it only one Shabbos of the year on Shabbos on the week of Parshas Hazinu. Yeah.
Right. Well, we say the Yom. We're saying I'm talking about the Yom.
No. So that's what we're saying. In the morning, on the Ashtabat Tomer Shoshach on Sunday, they would do Ashtabat Shemot Loya. Tomer Shoshach on Monday, they do Hashem Mahol Ma'od, etc. The same as we do that. By the Talmud Shoshachar, they would do right the one for that week.
Did you discuss why this?
Yeah, that's the Gemara had discussed it. That each one corresponds to what happened. You know, the first six of them, but also corresponds. The Gemara is saying over here that each one of them corresponds to what Hashem accomplished on that day in Ma'aseh Bereishis.
They didn't read
the Parsha of Levim? No, we're not talking about this. This is what the Levim would sing in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, while they're bringing the Korban Musaf of Shabbos, the Levim would sing one part of Hazinu.
Every
Shabbos. Until the cycle ended and they start over. The Minch Siddish. the mincha of the Shabbos of Mahayorim, what do they say, what do they do about mincha of Shabbos? The Pashas mincha, I mean, the Talmud Shabbat Abayim of all the other days, they would just do the same Shir Shoyim over again, but on Shabbos, evidently, the Gemara assumes they had something different. What was it? Amar Rav Yochanan, Oz Yashir, Umi Kamoicha, Oz Yashir. They would do Oz Yashir, which is Oz Yashir that we say in morning davening, Mi Kamoicha, which is the middle of the same Shira. In other words, they'd have two parts, first from Oz Yashir until Talal Kray Feres Mai Madidim, then another one from Mi Kamoicha till the end of the Shira, till Hashem Yim Lachon Zod. That's the Levim we're talking about, yeah. And Oz Yashir, and the other Oz Yashir, which is from Parshas Chukat, Oz Yashir Yisrael, the Shira of the Be'er, the Shira for the well of Miriam. So, Iboilahu, now they had a question. Hani Kula B'chad Shabbos Amri Lahu, does it mean that they said all three of these on one day, on every Shabbos? So every Shabbos they would read, so every, not read, every Shabbos they would sing both halves, they'd sing the first half of Oz Yashir, maybe they'd break in the middle and do Tkiyas or whatever, and then play the instruments or whatever, and then continue with Mika Mocha, and then play more instruments and whatever after that, and then so all three of them they'd be doing on one Shabbos, just with breaks in between. Oduma call Shabbos of a Shabbos, Amri Chad, or is it each Shabbos, one Shabbos they do Oz Yashir, the second week they do the second half of Oz Yashir, Mika Mocha, and the third week they do the Shira of the Bear. By the time they finished with the first one, the one from Musaf, by the time they finished going through it once, the second one, the ones from Mincha, would go over twice. Because if Hazina was divided into six parts, and we have three parts of the Shiras, Oz Yashir, Mekamarcha, and Oz Yashir, so it means it took 6 weeks to go through Hazinu. Meanwhile, during that time, they've gone over Oz Yashir, Mekamarcha, and Oz Yashir twice. Shmamina. Call Shabbos of a Shabbos Amri Chad. So therefore that proves that every week they do a different one. Just like with Hazinu, every week they'd be doing a different section of Hazinu. The same thing here, by Mincha. Every 1 week they'd be doing Oz Yashir until Ramayim Adirim. The second week they do Mika Moichel until the end of the Shira. And the third week, the Shira's a Mer. And then they'd start over again. Meanwhile, when they start over Oz Yashir, they're doing the fourth part of Hazinu now. And then they'd 4, 5, and 6. Meanwhile, they're doing these three again. And then the seventh week, they'd start them both over.
Each week they used to do one.
Each week they would do one of these three. By Moshe. By 6 weeks they've covered it twice, which meanwhile during that 6 weeks they've covered Hazinu once.
Oh, that's Hazinu
once. Hazinu once and these, the Oz Yashir become Oz Yashir twice.
Oh, twice.
Yeah, that's the idea, because one's six and one's three.
Okay.
Well, this was singing it. We're not just talking about saying it. We're talking about sing it while the korban is being brought, or while the nesachim are being brought, whatever. Yeah.
Now, what do you want to say,
Hazina on Shabbos? But on the other hand, it's reminding us that, you know, it's reminding us, first of all, that, you know, the korbanos aren't the be-all and end-all things, right? There's, you know, we got to do tshuva. We got to make sure we're staying on the right path. But there is. After all, the Rebbe talks about that in the Sikha also. After all, it's called a shir. It's not a sad. It's a serious thing. And that's why we read it Rosh Hashanah and Kippur time. But it's not a sad thing. It's a serious thing. You know, do the right thing, and you know, and everything will go well. And ultimately, there is a future for. And ultimately, there is a future. What? Okay. Okay. Well, you every day. Interesting. Okay. If you go over all the things that you're supposed to say every day, you could spend, you know, you spend the whole day learning, which is not entirely a bad thing. Since we talked in the Mishnah, and we're going to talk also in the next Mishnah, about the Tikkunis that Rabbi Yosef and Zakkai made after the Sanhedrin moved to Yavne, so now the Gemara is going to go through and explain what's the history behind that. When did the Sanhedrin move around? Or where did it move around? Amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Idi, Amar Rabbi Yosef, Esem Asai is not the Shechina, but the Shechina moved out of the Beit Mikdash in 10 stages. This we learn Mikroi, we learn Pesukim, as the Gemara is going to bring the Pesukim soon. We'll connect them, and corresponding to them, Golos and Sanhedrin, the Sanhedrin went into Golos from one place to another. That was Migemara, that one we know by tradition. Esem Asai is not the Shechina, the Shechina moved in 10 stages, meaning the Shechina left the Beit Mikdash. We know by the time the Beit Mikdash was destroyed, the Shechina had long since left it. If it weren't for that, the goyim never would have been able to destroy it. So, but Hashem didn't leave all at once. Kaviyachal, he wanted to give them a chance over and over again. So therefore, he moved in stages that people should realize how serious things are getting and do tshuva.
They didn't realize it was going to explode.
Evidently, some people realized, but then didn't pay attention. Other people didn't realize. I don't know. Hashem's presence, yeah. I mean, there's different levels of Hashem's Shekhinah, right? We have, you know, on one hand, I call the Esther a Shekhinah Kedushah. You have 10 Jews that are together. There's a Shekhinah with them. But we're talking about the Shekhinah that was in the Kodesh of Kedushah, of course. That was on top of the Ara, specifically. Well, the Kerubim, it was between the Kerubim, the Vein Shnei Kerubim, yeah. Marshall also associates it with the fact there's 10 Tzvidus, there's 10 levels of Kedushah. So corresponding to that, then, the Shekhinah started moving away stage by stage. We see that in Sukkim because the Pasuk says like this. They are the 10 stages are like this. The kaporis the krug, going from the kaporis, from the cover of the aron to the krug, which doesn't mean the krugim that are on the aron, because the shkinah is right there to begin with. It means the krugim that Shlomo made, the ones that we talked about in Yom of the Lord, wooden krugim that overshadowed the aron. Yeah. So the kaparis the krug, there are actually several different geosoids over here, exactly what and how exactly you calculate the 10 and whether there are any missing and any that have to be added, etc. When we krug the krug, then from one krug to the other, when we krug the mitzvah, then from the second krug to the threshold of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, when we mitzvah the chaser, from the threshold to the chaser, when we chaser the mizbeach, from the chaser to the mizbeach, the mizbeach achitza, and that is the outer mizbeach, when we mizbeach legag, from the mizbeach to the roof of the building, when we gag lechayma, from the roof to the wall of the harabayis, when we chayma leir, from the wall to the city itself, when we ir lahar, and from the city to the mountain, when we har the midbar, and from the mountain to the desert, when we midbar also the yashuv and chayma, and from the desert it went up and went back to its place in Shemayim. Like we said at the beginning of Basi Lagani, that originally the Shekhinah, it's the Shekhinah with Achayim Ha'isan, and 7 generations brought it, sent it back up to Shemayim. This is the same kind of thing. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Eilach Ashuva El Mekoimi, as the Pasuk says, the Eidusha says, I'll go and return to my place. Where do we see, from? We said we have Sukkim to substantiate all these. What are the Sukkim? The Kaparis, the Kruv, the Kruv, the Kruv, the Kruv, the Mishan, we have as follows. You see, first the Pasuk says, when I add the Hashem, the Eidusha says to Moshe, I will meet up with you over there, and I'll speak with you from above the Kaparis. But then there's a pasuk that says, "By Yukav Akruv Yoyf," that Hashem rode on a kruv and flew. So we see that at some point the Shekhinah is on the kruv. Now Rashi actually says, Rashi says actually that pasuk shouldn't be it here, because this "By Yukav Akruv" has nothing to do with the Shekhinah leaving the Beis Hamikdash. It's a pasuk actually has to be doing with the Yetzias Mitzrayim. Okay, but then the pasuk says, "The Chavod Elokei Yisrael Nalam Ala Kruv Asher Hayolav." The covered, this is where in Yechezkel, the covered of Hashem raised itself up from the kruv which it was on, El Mitzvah Mabayis, and went to the threshold of the house, threshold of the Kodesh Kedoshim, or maybe of the Heifel, I don't know. Whatever it is, though, the obviously if it was on the kruv, it must at some point it must have left the kaparis and moved to the kruv, and that's what we're saying. So the Nevi'im of that time knew, and they would have been telling the people. This pasuk I'm quoting over here is a pasuk from Yechezkel, where Yechezkel is describing. He described how he saw the withdrawal of the Shekhinah, how he saw some of the stages of the withdrawal of the Shekhinah. The pashtus, he was supposed to go and tell the people, do tshuva, the Eidusha is leaving, they're the Beit Hamikdash.
And
pashtus, he told them. I mean, there's a similar. Actually, the Gemara doesn't mention it over here, but there's an interesting thing in Yeshaya about Torah Parshas Yisroel. There's a pasuk that says there that he says, "I saw Hashem Yoshev Akiste Rom Mitzvah. I saw Hashem sitting on a high and exalted throne, Meshulav Malayim Etahechol, and the hem of his robe Kaviyachol is filling the Hechol. Shulav means the hem, like the lower border." So what's only the hem of Hashem's robe doing in the Heichol? Shouldn't the whole Shekhinah be in there? Actually, Rosham Shonafal Hirsch writes in one of his essays that evidently that means that already in Yeshaya's time the Shekhinah was beginning to leave the Beit Hamikdash and it's already like hovering over it. But in Chassidish terms, you could say that at that point it was a makif. It wasn't Malik Kolaman anymore. It's now Sofer Kolaman. Anyway. When we missed on the chaser, how do we know that the Shekhinah moved from the threshold to the chaser? Just see, by Yemalei Habayis Asan, another pasuk from the Kesel, the house was filled with the cloud of the Shekhinah, and the chaser, the courtyard, was filled with the glory of Hashem. So like the cloud is leaving the Heichal and going now to the Chatzal. Mechatzal Mizeach, this is a pasuk from Amos. Now Amos lived a long time before Yechezkel, but Rashi points out, I mean obviously the Shechinah is not going back and forth, if it's going out, it's going in stages from the inside out, so therefore this pasuk in Amos must be talking as a nevuah on the future, that Amos is seeing now in his time, 200 years before Yechezkel, or 100 years before Yechezkel, whatever it is, how in the future the Shechinah is going to be leaving the Beit Hamikdash. And he describes, he says, "Re'isi at Hashem nitzav al ha-mizbeach." I saw Hashem, meaning the Shechinah, standing on the Mizbeach. So we see that there was a point when the Shechinah was on the Mizbeach. When the Mizbeach was dug, then from the Mizbeach it went to the roof.
So Amos saw that
and described it, yeah. When the Mizbeach was dug, from the Mizbeach it went to the roof. Yechtiv, Tov l'shevet al pinas gag. There's a pasuk in Mishlei where it says it's better to sit on a corner of a roof than to have a have a rival in your house. Like the when to have a quarrelsome wife and a rival in your house. Like you have, you know, the Yidden are fighting with Hashem. They're doing Averis and they're bringing in Getchkes. Like the Eresha says, there's no room for me and a Getchke together in the Beis Hamikdash. If they're bringing in the Getchke, I'm leaving. The Toiv L'Shev is Alpinas Gog. It's better to sit on the corner of a roof. So we see that at some point the Shechinah was on the roof. Migad L'Chaim, it went from the roof to the wall. Bichtiv, another pasuk from Amos. V'hinei Hashem Nitzav Alchaim Esanah. Of the Harabayis. Or of the Azara. Of the Harabayis, yeah. Why? Because it says, another pasuk from Amos, V'hinei Hashem Nitzav Alchaim Esanah. I saw Hashem standing on a wall that was made with a plumb line. A plumb line is what builders use to make sure that a wall is perfectly straight. They have a piece of rope with a weight tied to the end of it to measure. So that's it's saying, I saw Hashem standing on a straight wall like that. That's the Shechinah is now on top of the wall. Not even inside the Azara anymore. This is Amos. This is the pasuk from Amos. But again, Amos is visualizing the future, how 200 years from now, the Shechinah is going to be on at some point on the wall, as it's gradually withdrawing from the Beit Hamikdash.
Okay. When before Hashem comes, the Shechinah is going to come down again?
Yes, indeed. Yechezkel, in the last prakim of Yechezkel, the last nine prakim of Yechezkel described the Beit Hamikdash HaShlishi, the future of Beit Hamikdash, and he describes there that, yes, he saw in his Nevuah the Shechinah returning to the Beit Hamikdash.
And it's going to be 10 stages?
Not necessarily 10 stages, no. Let it be all at once.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I don't know. How would we understand the Sukkah if the Yidden had never made the egg? I mean, you know, we'd find a positive understanding for them. You know. If the Jewish people had not sinned or if they had done Shuvah, then what would all these Sukkim mean? So they'd have another meaning. They'd have a higher meaning. I mean, the same way as the Tosafot. So, you know, you have the explanations in Chassidus for various Sukkim of the Tosafot so that explain them in Ruach Nidistik Haturim. These also we could have, yeah. Mechayim la'ir, it went from the wall into the city. Dichtiv Kol Hashem la'ir Yikra, the voice of Hashem called to the city. So we see that the Hashem is in the city. This is another pasuk from Yechezkel. The covered of Hashem rose up from inside the city. And it stood on the mountain east of the city. Harazetim. This is stage number 8. Umehau the midbar. Then it went from the mountain to the midbar. There's another pasuk from Mishlei.
From the mountain outside.
Not from the wall. From the wall it went to the city. From the city it went to the mountain outside Yerushalayim. From the wall of the Azara to in Yerushalayim proper into the city. And then from the city itself to the mountain outside.
Why didn't it go to the wall of Yerushalayim before it went to the midbar?
That's just the wall. It's part of the city. I don't know. Umehau the midbar. Yeah.
Now where is it?
What, the Shechinah?
No, where we were holding now. After the mountain.
After the mountain, the midbar. Next, from the mountain, it went to the midbar. Dichtiv, another pasuk from Mishlei. Tov Shevet Be'eretz Midbar. A similar pasuk that says it's better to live in the desert than to be living with a quarrelsome wife who gets you angry. Same idea. You know, the Yidden are upsetting the Eved with their Averis, so he says, I can't be around them anymore. Ain't any behu l'cholim l'odur. Midbar, it's not funny. And from the midbar, the Shechinah went back up to its place. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says that we quoted before, Eilach Hashuv Al Mekayim Yivagayim. Let me go and return to my place. That's why throughout Tanakh, yes, the relationship between the Jewish people and Hashem is compared to the relationship of a husband and wife.
I'm going up.
I don't really know what's funny about it, but okay. It's sad, really. Amr of Yechanan, Shisha Chadashim Nitzak B'Shechina L'Yisrael B'Midbar. For 6 months, the Shechina waited around for the Yidden in the Midbar, Shema Yachzur B'Tshuva. Maybe they'll do Tshuva. Kivin Shalei Chazur, once they didn't do Tshuva during all that time, Amr... No, we're talking during this process of the Shechina leaving the Beis Hamikdash. For 6 months, the Shechina is waiting there. When it left from the Har to the Midbar, and then from the Midbar to go back up the Shemayim, the Eibush is waiting there. Yeah, the Eibush is waiting 6 months. Kivin Shalei Chazur, once they didn't do Tshuva, Omar, Tibach Atzmon, he said, Tibach Atzmon, or Tibach Nachshon is a different girsa, basically means like their essence should blow up. Like, basically, you know, forget about them. I give up on them. So Marsha says about 6 months actually is the 6 months from Asar B'Tevis, when Nebuchadnezzar surrounded and besieged Yerushalayim, until Tetz Tammuz, which we learned earlier, at the end of the first Perek, that Tetz Tammuz was when the walls of Yerushalayim were breached at the end of the first Beis Mikdash. So that's the 6 months from Tevis until Tammuz. Although other Mephoshim asked on that, but on the face of it, it seems to have been much longer because the siege began 2 years before the Churban, so they planned for it in different ways, that it may attack have been only 6 months. It did come back, but not to the same level as before. That's why we learned in Yuma that there were five things missing in the second Mishnah. They didn't have the Urim Batumim, they didn't have Ruach HaKodesh, the fire on the Mizbeach, instead of being the shape of a lion, was the shape of a dog, etc. Yeah. So there was a level of Shekhinah there, but on a lower level. So for those 6 months, the Shekhinah is waiting, and then Tibach Atzmon, forget about it, and let the wall be breached, and let Yerushalayim be destroyed. Tibach Atzmon, literally means it should blow up. Shenema, as the pasuk says, the eini rishoyim tichlano, the eyes, meaning the hope of rishoyim, will waste away. Umanos oven minhem, and their refuge, meaning their strength, is gone from them. The Shekhinah was the strength of the Jewish people. Only after the Shekhinah left could the goyim conquer Yerushalayim. Ubetikvat the mapach nafesh, and their hope is going to be a disappointment. Mapach nafesh, maloshim tipach nafsham, that their hope that Yerushalayim won't be conquered, Eibush says that hope was a vain hope. You didn't want to do Tshuva, the Shekhinah is gone, Amonis Avad Minhem, then that's it. You guys are goners. Vaisrishin, yeah. Uchenegdon, in correspondence to that, Golsa Sanhedrin Migemara, we learn from Kabbalah that the Sanhedrin moved to 10 different places. Now, the places that the Gemara is going to list over here actually were at the end of and after the second Beis Mikdash. However, Marsha says that since the Gemara is saying Kenegdon, it may mean that Marsha says that actually it means that they actually went in 10 different places after the first Beis Mikdash as well. The Gemara is not listing them, but the places the Gemara is listing over here are after the second Beis Mikdash. But that nevertheless, they went into Golos at the end of the first Beis Mikdash also, corresponding to the Shechinah's Golos, which was in the first Beis Mikdash. What are the 10? So according to Marsha, it was.
According to Marsha, it was. Yeah. According to Rashi.
According to everybody else, not Rashi, but according to everybody else, the places that we're listing over here are the places where the Sanhedrin was headquartered during and after the Churban Bayis Sheni. So all the way until the time of Rebbe, as we're going to say, so that it's not at the same time, it's corresponding. What are they? Milishkas Agazis L'Chanus. Number one was they moved from Milishkas Agazis, their headquarters in the Beis Mikdash, to Chanus. Chanus literally means stores. So Rashi says that's actually what it means. They set up stores, like warehouses on the Har HaBayis, and the storefronts, like, and the Sanhedrin moved there. The reason for that is, the Gemara explains the Sanhedrin, because only when the Sanhedrin is headquartered in its proper place, in the Lashkar Sagazis, can they judge Dini Nefashis, can they judge capital cases. Now, towards the end of the second Beis Mikdash, there were many Roitzchim, there were many murderers. There came the point when the Sanhedrin doesn't have the koyach to judge them anymore because there will be too much political repercussions or whatever. So therefore, they figured instead of what are we going to do? You know, there's going to be people murdering and we're supposed to be judging them and we're afraid too, which is an issur in the Torah, like the Guru Mipneish. Better, let's move, and then that makes the whole point move. Then we can't judge Dinin HaFashos anymore, and that's what they did 40 years before the Churban.
They agreed to be second class.
What?
40 years of mass murder going on without any justice.
Yep. Yep.
That was the worst time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Bar-Kokhba is 50 years after the Churban. What's that after with anything? Then Mechanus LeYerushalayim. Then they went from Chanus to Yerushalayim, meaning into the city itself. UmeYerushalayim LeYavne, from Yerushalayim to Yavne. This is the famous thing where Rabbi Yosef and Zakkai asked Tzatzmas Yonas, "Ten LeYavne v'Chachamea," and then the Sanhedrin moved to Yavne, which is what we've been talking about in these last couple of Mishnayos. UmeYavne LeUsha. Then from Yavne they moved to Usha. Usha is up in the north, it's in the Galil. Rashi says the general rule is, wherever the Nasi lived, that's where the Sanhedrin would move to. So it was in Yavne in the times of Rav Gamliel, then it was in Usha in the time, then it was in Usha also in the time, no, actually Rashi says Yavne was in the times of Rav Yechon ben Zakkai. But Rav Gamliel lived in Usha, and therefore when he became the Nasi, then the Sanhedrin moved to Usha. There's other historical books, in particular Joseph Rishonim has a very long discussion about this. He explains that basically there came a point when the Romans started harassing them in Yavne, and therefore they had no choice but to move up to the Galil, where the Roman era is also under Roman rule, of course, the whole Eretz Yisrael was, but at least they were less likely to harass them there. In particular, he says that there was a Roman emperor who came to power about 10 years after the Churban named Domitian. He was Aspasianus' younger son. His oldest son Titus was emperor for a couple of years, and then he dropped dead. And then his brother Domitian took over. This Domitian was a really terrible anti-Semite. He wasn't that great to the Romans either. They ended up assassinating him. So it was during his time that they were forced to move to Usha. He says.
He was
an unfledged violin? No, that was Nero. Yeah.
They had a bunch of
Then Umel Usha Yavne, but then from Usha they went back to Yavne. Rashi says they went back to Yavne in the times of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. We find, the Gemara is going to talk about tomorrow, that they were back in Yavne in the times of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So again, according to Rashi, it would mean Rav Shimon ben Gamliel lived in Yavne, therefore the Sanhedrin moved there. According to Halevi and Derdus of Shonim, this was when Domitian was finally assassinated and the next emperor, Nerva, his name was, took over. He was a lot nicer to the Jews, so they figured they were safe to move back to Yavne. Umay Yavne la Usha, but then they had to move again from Yavne to Usha. Which historically, then, according to Halevi, that was during the time of the next emperor, Trajan, who was again an anti-Semite. So they were forced to move to Usha. Umay Usha la Shvaram, then from Usha they had to move to Shvaram, yet another place in the Galil. Umay Shvaram la Beit Sha'arim, Umay Sha'arim la Tzipori, Umay Tzipori la Tveria. Rashi says these last few, Beit Sha'arim, Tzipori, and Tveria, were all in the times of Rebbe. Rebbe originally lived in Beit Sha'arim, but then he wasn't feeling well, he got sick, so they moved to Tzipori. Tzipori is on a mountain.
Beit Sha'arim
is also in the north. They found there very interesting, they excavated there very interesting, a cemetery from that period, from the times of Rebbe, and they found a lot of interesting gravestone inscriptions from Jews who lived at that time. It's one of the famous, yeah. Anyway. So that was Beit Sha'arim, but then Rebbe wasn't feeling well, so they moved to Tzipori. Tzipori is on a mountaintop. So therefore, the air is a lot better there. And then from there, they moved to Tveria. From there, they moved to Tveria.
Tzipori is in Meron.
Tzipori is roughly it's near Meron. It's a few miles from Tveria. It's a few miles from Tveria. Actually, the Rabbi Yaakov Emdens has an interesting idea. He says that Tzipori is none other than Sfas, which we know has very clear, pure air. But then, and then from there to Tveria. Well, Tveria amukam mikolan, and Tveria was the deepest of all of them, which means Rashi says it means they were at the lowest ebb. Like this is when they were at their lowest point of all the 10 places. It means Rashi says they were lower down, not lower in altitude, lower in position and in position and how things were and how the situation was. They were lower than all the other places, as bad as it was when they were in Usha and Shvarim and etc. They were worse off of all when they were in Tveria. That's how historically it was. I mean, even though Rashi says it was in the times of Antoninus, and Antoninus and Rebbe were friends, nevertheless the situation in Eretz Yisrael had gotten so bad that they were at a very low ebb there.
Not necessarily Beruchnius, but in the situation in Eretz Yisrael, in the situation of
how they're living over there. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'shafalt me'eretz tedaberi, you'll be brought low and you'll speak from the earth. Like a person is pressed into the dirt, and like you just barely hear his voice from the dirt. That's the situation that the Jewish people were in at that time, when the Sanhedrin was in Tveria. Rabbi Loza says there weren't 10 Golosin of the Sanhedrin, there were 6. Shenemar, the pasuk says, a pasuk in Yeshaya, ki heishach yoshei morim, Hashem has brought low those who dwelt on high, meaning the Sanhedrin that used to be headquartered in the heights by the Beis Mikdash, kiryon nisgava, the exalted city, yashpilana, he brings it low, yashpila ad oretz, he brings it low until the ground, yagieno ad ofro, he makes it reach down all the way to the dust. So we have heishach, yashpilana, yashpila ad oretz, yagieno, and ad ofro, 6 expressions of being brought low. So therefore he says 6. So what's six? But Pashas, he's just counting the six different places. He's not counting, for example, the two times they were in Yavne and two times they were in Usha, but Pashas, he's collapsing them into one, for example, and then maybe some of the others also. From there, we said that they ended up in Tiberia. From there, when they were at their lowest position, is where they're going to be taken out of Golos, is where they're going to be redeemed. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Yisnari may offer, shake yourself off from the dust, kumishvi, and come, Yerushalayim, sit up straight, the Gola is here." And the Rambam actually passes this halacha, that when the Sanhedrin is reestablished, actually the Rambam himself says that maybe it can be reestablished even nowadays, if everybody in Eretz agrees anyway, he says they'll start out in Tiberia, and from there they'll move to the Beit Mikdash, which fits with you. So the Rambam himself talks about the idea, and it became a very controversial thing a few hundred years later, that if all the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael agree to be same as somebody, then they can. Then that has a status equivalent to the smicha from Moshe Rabbeinu's times, and then that person can be samech others. 400 years ago, 400 or 500 years ago, there was a very famous episode in Jewish. There was a very famous episode in Jewish history involving Rabbi Yaakov Beirav, one of the Rebbeim of the Mechaber, who actually tried this. He got together most of the Chachamim of Tzfat, which in those times were most of the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael. They all agreed to follow the Rambam and reestablish Smicha. They gave him Smicha. He gave a few other people Smicha. Actually, the Beis Yosef was indeed one of them. The problem was that Rav Levi ben Chaviv, the Rabbah, who was the Rav of Yerushalayim at the time, disagreed with the whole thing on various grounds, and on various grounds of halacha. The Rabbaz, who at that time was the chief rabbi of Mitzrayim of Egypt, also disagreed with it. And so it continued for a couple of generations, but eventually it broke off. Eventually they gave it up. There were a couple of attempts. You mentioned Rav Akiva Yosef Schlesinger. Yeah, he made an attempt to do the same thing in the 1800s. There was a Rabbi Yisrael of Shklov, one of the Talmidim of Vilna Gaon, tried it in the 1800s.
Yeah, he wanted to go to
the that was a different thing. But when the state of Israel was founded, they talked about making a Sanhedrin. And there's a letter from the Rebbe where he writes to one of the rabbis at that time saying, you know, in general you find that people who tried to reinstitute a Sanhedrin are not necessarily the frumps of the people. You have the famous Sanhedrin of Napoleon, for example. So the Rebbe was sure of the whole idea. About ten years ago, Adon Steinsaltz put together a Sanhedrin, and they appointed him the head of it. So they're Taka headquartered in Tveria. So maybe Taka they'll end up being the Sanhedrin of Mashiach times, or you know. According to everybody who disagrees with the Rambam, by the way, such as the Rabbah and everybody else, they would say, when Mashiach comes, we're going to have Eliyahu HaNavi beforehand. Eliyahu HaNavi has Smicha. He can be Simon.
But the one that are putting together, then Rabbi Mimon, you know, Rabbi Mimon from...
Rabbi Mimon, yeah, that's
right,
the one I think
he tells us, look, and he can't find Sinek, what's that?
Okay.
So when you said, I can get anything with the money.
Okay. Let's leave the history lesson for later, please. Okay. The Mishnah says, "Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, va'oid zoi tiskin Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai." Here's another takana that Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai made. Sha'afilu roish beisin b'chol makom, that no matter, even if the roish beisin, even if the nasi is someplace else, shelo yura edim hochon elo l'makom apad. The edim should only be going to the designated place for beisin. In other words, you don't say this, that the edim have to go figure out where the nasi is and go over there to give their edus, because the roish beisin is the one who has to send a kodesh. No, they just go to the makom apad and they do clear a shodesh. We can tell the story in that connection. There was a certain woman, the Azmanuha Ladina Kameda Amemar. They summoned her to a din Torah in front of Amemar, Ben Haudi, in the city of Nahauda. Also Amemar Mechuza. Now Amemar instead had gone to the city of Mechuza, and he sent a message saying that you guys have to come over here to Mechuza to continue the din Torah. The Lo Oza Basre. And this woman didn't follow him. Because of Psicha Ilava, so he wrote out a document of Shamta, a document of Chayrim against her, which is what you do to somebody who refuses to come to Beis Din when they're summoned. Amalei Rav Ashi v'Amemar, why? V'hanan t'nan, didn't we learn in our Mishnah, afilu roish Beis Din b'chol mokum, even if the roish Beis Din is someplace else, shelo yura edim hochon elo l'mokum avad. The edim should only have to go to the place of the vad, to the place of the Beis Din. So the same thing over here. This woman came to Nahauda, to the Beis Din shtibul. Why are you telling her that unless she comes to you, the roish Beis Din, in Mechuza, then she's in Chayrim? Amalei, he says, they've hanim yulid in Eretz Chodesh. That's as far as when it comes to Edim for the new moon.
They go to the Vad
instead of making them schlep all over the place. Because otherwise you're going to be machshel them in the future. They're going to say it's too much of a bother. If you make them go and find where the Rosh Beis Din is, then they're going to say, forget about it, I can't be bothered next time. And we want to encourage Edim to come. Aval Hocha, but Rabbi Yehuda, Eved Loiva Le'ish Malveh. The Loiva is, the Pasuk says, a slave to the Malveh, meaning not literally a slave, but in the sense that he's subject to whatever the Malveh wants. If the Malveh is going to be bringing the Din Torah in another city, then yes, the Loiva has to follow him. Turn it up, we learn it up, right?
Ain Kohen and Rashi. Was the deal with this woman?
Yeah, so that was the deal.
Borrowed money and
so she borrowed money or whatever it was. She owed money, whatever the case was. Yeah. Some kind of dinim, I'm going to say. No, this was, she was being summoned to Beis Din, meaning she's the one who owes the money. Right. Yeah.
Not the
Tevea,
the
Malveh. The Malveh is the Tevea. If the other guy doesn't pay back, then he becomes the Tevea. Yeah. The truth is, Mephoshim talk about the fact that Rambam does not bring this whole din of lo yoreidim heyochanel lo lamakom avad. So they discuss, you know, does the Rambam hold that maybe it was only a temporary measure, or maybe it only applies in certain cases, or what? Turn it up, we learn it about it. Ain koinim rashoin lalos v'sandalei on the duchan. The koinim are not allowed to go up to duchan with their sandals on. This is why the koinim take off their shoes. This is one of the 9 takonis that Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai made. Since we're mentioning all Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai's takonis, so we mentioned this one also. Why takonot? The Gemara in Sota, where there's a whole sugya about Birkas Kohanim, explains the reason is Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai was concerned, what happens if the guy's shoelace breaks? He's going to be sitting down to fix it before he can go up to Duchen. People are going to think, oh, he's sitting down because he's not really a Kohen. He's a Ben Grusha, Ben Chalutza, he's a Cholol, whatever. So therefore, in order to avoid that pagam, they don't take off your shoes like a filler before you go up to Duchen. No, you can't be Milo in the Duchen, the Yuchten, actually. Yeah, that's the point. In other words, they're going to think, because he's not Duchening, So why is he only concerned about that after the Churban? So one explanation would be because during the time of the Beis Mikdash, so he doesn't duchen one time, he still has the Beis Mikdash to serve in. They'll see he's a Kohen that way. Yeah. There's no Beis Mikdash, then yeah.
They check their lineage in
the Beis Mikdash. Yeah. So what are the...
In
both of them, there's Vechel
Amayla. Yeah, so Kohen is working there with Vechel. Yeah.
Then you might not have to check any further on him, right? So what are the 9? Shis the high pirka. We have 6 takanas of Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai in this perek. Namely, we had this one that we just mentioned about the sandals when it comes to Birkas Kohanim. We had that you blow shofar on Shabbos in Yavne, that you take the lulav 7 days everywhere, that the whole day of Tetzai Nissen you're not allowed to eat chodosh, that you can that your makabel edus a chodosh all day long. We're not worried because there's no kilkul that's going to happen with the shir. And that the Sanhedrin should do, and what Rabbi Shoben Kocha is saying in our Mishnah, that you don't need the Rosh Beis Din, that the Edom just come to the Makam Aval. So that's 6 so far. V'chodah the High Pirka, v'chodah the Pirka Kama, and 1 from the first Perek. We had over there that in the times of the Beis Mikdash, the Edom could be Mechal Shabbos to come give Edos al Chodesh for any month, because you need to make sure they bring the Korban in the right time. After the Korban, Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai says there's no Korban, you don't need to do that. We're only giving Mechal for Nissan and Tishrei. So far that's 7. The Edoch, what's number 8? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Ger shenis gayav is not a zeh, a person who becomes a ger nowadays, when there's no Beis Mikdash, tzorech shiyachvish roi velakinoi. He has to set aside a quarter for his pair of birds. A quarter, Rashi says it means a quarter of a shekel. Tosfos argues that instead it means a quarter of a dinner. Whatever it is, that was the price in those days of a pair of birds. A ger, the basic rule is, we're going to talk about it in Yevamos in a few months from now, Be'ez Hashem, that the rules for a ger are similar to the rules that we Jewish people underwent when we left Mitzrayim. We had Mila before we left Mitzrayim. We had Tvila before Matan Torah. And we had our Tzah Sdom, and we had a Korban brought on our behalf that says in Parshas Mishpatim that Moshe sent the Nare B'nai Yisrael and they brought Korban. Correspondence to that, again, needs Mila, if he's a male, Tvila, and our Tzah Sdom needs a Korban. The minimum Korban is 2 birds. An Ola and a Chakas. So therefore, the ger has to set aside, we're saying, there's this quarter of a shekel or a quarter of a dinner in order to be able to buy it, because when the Beis Mikdash is going to be built, he has to bring his korban. However, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, K'van Nimna, Allah Rabbi Yechim ben Zakkai, Yobithlam of Netakana. Rabbi Yechim ben Zakkai put the thing to a vote in Beis Din and was revocable because of the takala, because of the stumbling block. You're going to put away this quarter of a dinner, which is supposed to be hektish. Meanwhile, you're going to forget that it may be a long time before the Beis Mikdash is built, as it in fact turned out to be, And meanwhile, you're going to end up spending it by mistake, and you're going to commit me'ilah. So better you shouldn't set it aside. When Mashiach comes, then you'll deal with it. So that's the eighth sakana of Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai. The idach, what's the ninth one, is plugged to the papa of Rav Nachman Yitzchok. There's an argument between Rav Papa and Rav Nachman Yitzchok what the ninth one is. Rav Papa Amar Kerem Revai, Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar Loshon Shel Dehoros. Rav Papa says that it's the takana about Kerem Revai, about a vineyard in its fourth year. And Rav Nachman Yitzchok says that it's about the Loshon Shel Dehoros, the red strip of wool that we learned about in Yoma. What are these things? Rav Papa Amar Kerem Revai is as follows, the Tanya or the Tanan. Kerem Revai, Ho'ola Lerushalayim, Malach Yoyim Lechol Tzad. The Torah says the fruit from a tree the first 3 years is also to eat and is also to have an offering. The fourth year, the Torah says it's Kodesh Ilulam Lashem. You're supposed to take the fruit to Yerushalayim and you eat it over there. Or you exchange it for money and you bring the money to Yerushalayim and you eat it over there. So, Midah Raisa, as long as you're outside Yerushalayim, you can be Kodesh that fruit. You can be right outside the walls of Yerushalayim and you can still exchange the fruit for cash and bring the cash into Yerushalayim and the fruit becomes holy. But midrabbanan, kerem revai ha'ola l'Yerushalayim, a kerem revai, you had to be brought up to Yerushalayim, mahalach yom l'chol tzad, for one day's walk in each direction. V'zu tchoma, and this is the tchom, elas min atzofen, v'akrivas min adorim, or maybe it should be the other way around, elas, this isn't the elas, this is the elas in Israel nowadays, that's far south of Yerushalayim, but a place called elas, which is north or maybe south of Yerushalayim, one day north or south, v'akrivas min adorim, lud min amayrav, lud on the west, v'yardin min amizrach, and the Yarden River on the east. All those places that you find a circle, one day's walk around Yerushalayim. What's the reason for the takana? In order to beautify the marketplaces of Yerushalayim with fruit. There's a few different explanations how exactly this accomplishes that. One is that you bring your Ma'aser Sheni fruit over there, but you can still sell it to somebody in Yerushalayim over there, because you yourself may not have the chance to eat it all. So you sell it to somebody else over there, and then you buy something else and eat it, and eat it over there. So therefore, the marketplaces there have fruit in them now. Different explanation is, on the contrary, you're bringing your fruit and eating it, so there's not as much need to buy fruit in Yerushalayim. So therefore, the marketplaces still stay stocked with a lot of fruit, and it looks beautiful. Whatever it is. Vitanya, then we learn in a braisa, Kerem Revai Haile Rabbi Eliezer Mizrach Lod. Rabbi Eliezer had a vineyard which was from the fourth year on the east side of Lod. So if Lod is the western border of a day from Yerushalayim, then anything east of Lod is within that one day walk. Betzad Kfar Tovi, next to Kfar Tovi, or Bikish Rabbi Eliezer Lafkir Lanim. Rabbi Eliezer wanted to just give it away as a hefker to the poor people. For him, it would have been a hassle to take the fruit to Yerushalayim. If the takana is you can't be poided within that one day's radius, you have to bring it to your slime. It was too much of a hassle for him. So he figured, fine, I'll make it hefker for that name. They can bring it to your slime.
For that year.
Yeah, for that year. Yeah. Amrulai Talmidim, but it's Talmidim telling Rebbe, Kranimnu Chaverecha Alecha, all of your Chaverim, your colleagues, already voted on it, Vihitziruhu, and they will master it. So, Man Chaverecha, what does it mean, your friends? It means Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai. So then, according to that, this would be the ninth takana of Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai. That you don't have to bring the fruit anymore because your slime is destroyed. There's no reason to beautify the marketplace of your slime with fruit. Why? For the Roman soldiers that are there now, for the couple of Jews who are managing to hang on over there, there's no reason to. So Orla is still also, but Kerem Revai, the point is, nowadays you poida Kerem Revai, you exchange the fruit for cash, You can't. There's no Yerushalayim. There's no. The Yerushalayim doesn't have the same kedusha to bring it to. So therefore, you destroy the money.
Destroy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's similar to what you do with Ma'aser Sheni. We learned in Beitza, by the way, that even though this is an example of the idea that even though the reason for the takana went away, nevertheless you still need an official vote of Beit Din to undo it. You don't just say, well, if the reason was to beautify the marketplaces of Yerushalayim, there's no marketplaces of Yerushalayim anymore, so automatically they're going to go away. No, they actually have to vote on it.
And we see that they did.
Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar Loshon Shel Dehoros. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says that the ninth takana is the one as far as the Loshon Shel Dehoros, the red strip of wool. We learned about it in Yuma, but actually it's 9:40 now. We should probably go downstairs and daven and leave it for tomorrow.